HJ, Houston.
Welcome to the spirit world, answering your questions on angels, demons, and how the spiritual and physical worlds interact. And now your hosts, Debbie Giorgiani and Adam Bly.
Well, hello there. Yay, you hear all that clapping. That is amazing. Thanks, you guys. Hello and welcome to the spirit world. I am Debbie Giorgiani along with Adam Bly, religious demonologist. We are the co-hosts of your show, The Spirit World, and we're on location live in Dubuque, Iowa for the Christ the King Conference for Our Lady of Good Success Radio Network, Aquinas Communications, and we are super excited to be here because we are going to be taking questions from the live studio audience, and we are just ready to go. So thanks, you guys, for welcoming us. We are being heard right now all over the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. But Adam and I, we are so committed every single episode. We never start ever until we start in prayer with the St. Michael prayer.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. St. Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, O Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, cast into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who prowl about the world seeking the ruin of souls. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.
So again, we are broadcasting live from the Q Casino and Resort, and they have just been so wonderful and gracious to us. We have filled this entire banquet room. I think there's three banquet rooms. So we just want the whole entire world to hear how excited Dubuque, Iowa for Our Lady of Good Success Radio Network can get. One more time, big applause. That's right. That's right. So if you're listening in New York, you're listening in Texas, if you're listening in California, you're with us in spirit right now here at Christ the King Conference. So we're so excited about that. Now, normally we go very fast for this hour for the spirit world. We take questions from our audience and we take questions from callers. Now, you are the live studio audience, so you're going to be asking the questions today. Our callers are going to sit this out for this particular episode because you are going to represent them, okay? Because they want to know certain things about spiritual warfare. Because Lent, I think I can honestly say this, has been quite difficult for many of us. And so they want to learn. So you're going to be representing the whole world today with your questions that you're going to bring up to the podium and ask. And everyone else is going to listen and learn all around the world. Sound good? Sounds good. All right. So we're going to get started. I always like to start at the beginning of every single episode. We are live today, so please, on social media, let me just make sure everybody on the socials, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, X, and Twitch, you guys are awesome. Put your comments in the chats. If you want to say hello to everybody here in Dubuque, Iowa, put it in the chats because they're going to put it up on screen, and we'll go ahead and announce it to this wonderful conference attendees that are here in this amazing, huge conference room. So let's first turn our attention to my co-host, Adam Bly, because every single episode I ask him, how was his exorcism ministry work this week?
This week I wasn't there. Because I was on my way to this live event.
There you go. It was easy then, huh?
Yes, it was easy. So Lent has been challenging. I've mentioned that before. We've got a lot of new cases coming in that we're diagnosing, a lot of challenges. So, yeah, it just continue to pray for that the church prays for, the teams and all the exorcists out there. Because, yeah, they're all busy. We're trying our best. We're trying to see everybody. But yes, God is good. God wins. But in the meantime, it's a challenge, but that's okay.
I love when you said God is good. You say all the time.
All the time.
Yes, he's good all the time. Okay, so we are going to now get our first couple questions in. I just want to again thank our senior producer Tim Mott from Guadalupe Radio Network. He is monitoring everything right now. And they have just done such a wonderful job there. We are produced by the Guadalupe Radio Network, heard on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. So it's a big production. And Chris Pauly and his team have done such a great job making all the connections. So we hope to do this, more of these events like this on location, because people have asked us, can you bring the spirit world to our parish, to our event, so that that you can ask the questions that pertain to you, where you live, in your city, what's going on, right? Because one of our promos that we do for the spirit world is we say that demonic activity is rising and is at an all-time high. Well, in different areas, it can feel a little bit different. So we want to make sure we're there on location. We love being with everyone. So thank you again for filling all these seats here and being part of this great production. How about we get our first question? What do you say?
Let's go.
Okay, first question, Liz.
Good morning. The first question is from Dick B. in Dubuque, and he would like to know, how do we revive the practice of respecting the Mass, like Father Ripperger suggests, and that we have always in the past incorporated into the Mass?
Okay, so my take would be is belief in the true presence on this one. I know we're going to try to go fast today, and of course we could talk about the Eucharist for hours. But I think an early understanding with your children, with your family about the true presence, and if you've lost touch with that yourself, finding it again. I have a priest friend who a long time ago had a lot of wisdom and experience, and he said if we understood fully what was there in the tabernacle, we would enter the church on our knees before the Mass even starts. So I would say that's the core of it. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. And I love how you said Jesus is truly present. Emphasize that in your words. When you speak about believing in the Most Holy Eucharist, say Jesus is truly present. Emphasize that with your friends, with your family members, because that gets deposited, if you will, into people's souls. And that's how our God works. He's using us to spread the message, to spread the truth. So it's in our words, it's in our actions, and to model it. If we receive respectfully, if we dress modestly, if we really have a disposition of knowing how beautiful this highest form of prayer is in the Mass, that's going to definitely affect others. Because remember, people are drawn to and people want what you have if you're really living it. So live it. Next question, please.
Hi, my name is Scott. Other than praying for our diocese and our parishes, what is a concrete way to have spiritual warfare talked about by our bishops, priests, deacons, and our lay ministers?
This is a good question. It's true that there is not everywhere, but there's kind of a reticence to talk about spiritual warfare too much because here's the thing. People, if they get information out of context without a theological foundation to understand it, it can lead to fear and kind of anxiety and misunderstanding. So I think that's partly why a lot of priests are reticent to kind of go there, because without the time to explain and give a context, it can be difficult. Now, how can we improve that? I think it would be at the parish level. So if you bring in speakers at the parish, just somebody local, somebody that knows about these things, and get that kind of grassroots comfort with the material, and then maybe ask your pastor not to preach about it, but maybe they'll give an optional talk, some evening as a parish program, and kind of start that way. I think I'm cutting out on the microphone. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, would you repeat the question again? I just want to make sure that our producers are hearing it again.
Okay. Other than praying for our diocese and our parishes, what is a concrete way to have spiritual warfare talked about by our bishops, priests, deacons, and lay ministers?
I think you answered it well, Adam. The only thing I would say is, and really encourage your priests, and when you hear a good homily from your deacons and your pastor and your priests, encourage them and challenge them to go deeper. That's really the key, because I think sometimes the clergy, they may be hesitant to do anything, to be, they don't want to push parishioners away. They want to build community. They want to make everybody feel welcome. They want to make everybody feel at peace. So there is. Did you share that? There is a certain, they'll be a little bit apprehensive about approaching certain topics because they don't know where people are at spiritually.
Yeah, and there can be a real value. One way to approach your pastor about this, if you want this type of material covered, is to remind them that people are being catechized by YouTube and by the internet, and if we don't provide solid, grounded catechesis with all the context, people are going to go get that, what seems to be exciting stuff, and it's going to be taken with clips out of context and shocking and scary things sometimes without the context of understanding where it comes from. And so if we don't address it in the church in a measured, balanced way, people are going to get it in an unbalanced way. So that might be a way to approach the conversation.
Great answer. Thank you so very much. Okay, next question, Liz. Liz is doing such a great job. Can we give Liz a round of applause? Awesome. Thank you, Liz, so very much. Lots of questions are coming in. We're trying to go really fast. So next question, please.
I do have a lot of questions. The next question comes from Brad in Cascade. He says, our culture seems obsessed with dark things. How much should we follow or pay attention to the demonic or exorcism stories?
Okay, so I want Adam to answer this one, but I'm just going to say Brad is spot on. If you go and look on social media, you will see one after another videos coming up about exorcists and exorcisms and the demonic. I mean, it's like one of the most, they say it's like the highest for people searching stuff. But Adam's got a really good take on this.
Yeah, so the old joke, schedule a talk on Satan and you'll fill the room, schedule a talk on Jesus and three people will come. The topic is just inherently interesting. I suspect the reason is at the core level, everybody, even people that are ostensibly secular and not religious or spiritual, everybody has a gut level intuition that there's something real there. They've seen the movies and something in them says, I'll mock religion and spirituality till the cows come home, but that's one area that maybe I'll leave that alone. Like we all, I think, have that kernel of something. And so out of all the monster themes and Frankenstein and vampires and all that, we don't take all of that, we kind of brush off and say, like, okay, it's a story. When it comes to demons, I think that's one area where there's some little nugget of, yeah, but there's something real there. So I think it's inherently interesting to people. I really think that the church's wisdom in not talking about this a lot is well-founded and was built up over a lot of time and a lot of experience. Sorry if anybody's hearing buzzing. We're having some trouble with the microphone. So I don't want to give too long of an answer, but essentially it's not good to be focused on exorcism and the demonic. As I've alluded to in previous questions as we've been sitting here, you're going to get stuff out of context and you're going to get sound clips and little nuggets of things that is going to give you a misunderstanding. This is a very specialized area of theology. That's a very advanced area of theology. And you really should just leave it to the professionals. It would kind of be like saying, oh, I want to go learn about serial killers. And, I want to go like read this or watch this interview and say I'm an expert versus the people that go and investigate and try to catch and maybe interview them in prison. That's very, very different, right? So we don't want to imagine we have a good understanding because we've seen an interview or read a book, right? And here's the thing. My overall theme in the coming years, because I see this as a real problem, is our culture, a lot of us are putting the devil at the center of our spiritual lives. So if you get too focused on exorcism and all this dark stuff, it becomes, well, how am I going to deal with him? And what prayers do I need to ward him off? And how am I going to deal with it if there's a problem? And so-and-so's acting funny, and maybe it's Satan. And you end up living this defensive, scared spiritual life based on defense. That's not Christian. That's not healthy. Center your life on God. The devil is a side issue. Yes, he's there, but the center of your life needs to be Jesus, and trust in him, and hope, and joy, and expansiveness and love, not focused on the bad guy and thinking, how do I defend myself? He's so scary, right? He's just a creature. He's limited. He can only do what Jesus lets him do. And he can only get into our lives as much as we let him in terms of the extraordinary. We're all going to be tempted, but let's leave him in the proper context. He's not everything, and don't let him become the center of your life.
Did you like that answer? And by the way, I don't think Adam's going to have any more issues with his microphone, because that was me that was causing it. It was picking up my cell phone, so I apologize to my co-host, because I feel
no
bad.
Problem.
That's difficult to be on a microphone and have it go in and out. So I think we're all set, smooth sailing from this point forward. Next question, please.
Hi, I'm Susan.
Hi, Susan.
From Dubuque. Hi, thanks for being here. My question is, does a parent's spiritual authority over their children remain for life or just until a certain age?
Oh, great question. Does parents' spiritual authority remain for life or just to a certain age, like the age of reason or when they become an adult? Okay.
Yeah, so this is actually a canonical question. And I happen to be a canon lawyer and judge, and I have a licentiate in canon law. Not that that's special, I'm just saying I know a little bit about this stuff. So the parental authority we can see exhibited most clearly in the fact that the parent can choose to baptize the baby, and you don't ask the baby, would you like to be baptized, right? The infant, because they can't give consent, they can't even understand the question. Yet God honors the baptism, and it has the full effect if the parent chooses to do it. So we see in the mind of the church, in the way God has set things up, that the parent has full spiritual authority up to what? The age of reason, which canon law says is typically 7 years old. However, that can be higher if there's perhaps damage to the brain or a developmental disability, that kind of thing. You could have situations where that authority goes for many more years. But most kids, it's about 7. Now, so you don't have the ability to choose for your 16-year-old, right? As much as a lot of parents would like to. You don't have the right to dictate what happens to them spiritually and their spiritual choices. Likewise, when they're 30. Do you have a particular, probably special ability to pray for them and intercede for them? Absolutely. And the reverse is true. I've seen situations where there was a possessed mom and 3 kids, and the one boy was like about 13 at the time, and we were praying in the house, and the boy knelt by the couch that mom was on in the demonic state, and said, God, would you please give me my mommy back? And like that, she was back to her senses. She wasn't liberated, but the demons backed off, and she was immediately back to her senses and comforted her son. So there's a special spiritual relationship between parents and children that does go beyond the age of reason, but you don't have full authority to choose.
And a lot of saints, private revelation, but a lot of saints talked about the power of parents' prayers. Look at Saint Monica. So God is all about relationships, and he loves that connection. And so there's a reason that we have this structure, and that's very, I think, very pleasing to God. So when it comes to authority, if it were me, I would lean on private revelation in that area, that, you know, it extends past them even going into the world independently. As an adult, I think you're always going to have that connection, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Works for me, because I have adult children, so.
Okay, the next question is from Tammy in Dubuque. and she wants to know about her grandchildren playing with Pokemon cards. Is it good or is it bad?
Well, my children did. I checked with a priest when all the craze, you know, the Harry Potter craze, you know, all those different things, the trends that all the kids at that time were playing with, and my son was into Pokemon, but I didn't. I think anything that becomes so addictive that can actually ruin the family dynamic, I think, is a problem across the board. Anything, TV, games, anything. So I think as a parent you got to be careful with that. But then also if you're uncertain, I would also check with your priest and see how he feels about certain things that are going on, the different craze and different video games. But I mean, I'd love to hear Adam's thoughts on this because, you know, from coming from your background with demonology, do you think the demons are using these?
I think this, like a lot of areas in popular culture, we have to take kind of a common sense approach most of the time. So, yes, there is a strong theme of demonic spirits within Jap animation, with anime. It's a very commonly used theme within that. And Pokemon came from manga, from the anime in Japan. And it's kind of a childlike version of demonic spirits helping people. And they don't obviously help people, right? They're deceptive destroyers and dividers. But you'll see that. So there is a cultural thread there where it's kind of like a child version of some of the demonic themes that you can see. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, you're going to be possessed because you pick up a Pokemon card, or, you know, it's going to blow your family apart because somebody bought a bunch of packs of cards or something. It kind of depends on how much you engage with it and how you engage with it, which is true with a lot of things in our culture, right? If you take it to an extreme and it becomes an obsession, and here's the thing. Personally, I think the real danger with things like Harry Potter, if somebody got deeper into the demonic side of anime from Pokemon, is that it's kind of a gateway drug. It's not that you're going to have a train wreck of a problem playing around with this basically surface level cultural stuff, but if it leads to later playing with witchcraft for real and normalizing it, so a little later in life you're more likely to actually play with the occult and say, like, well, maybe it does work because it's been normalized. I think that's the danger of it, is that it can soften you up for later. So avoid it. But if somebody's getting really wrapped up in it, or they're going into the darker anime stuff that it came from, then I would definitely stop.
When my youngest son he collected Pokemon cards, if I told him no or said we weren't going to do that, he would have been the only child in the whole entire school who was not allowed to touch those cards. What would you say to that for parents that have their kids in public school? I mean, it was a difficult situation. I did not let my kids, this is just me now talking, I didn't let my kids get into the Harry Potter craze. I didn't. And they were okay with it, but they pushed back. They were like, Mom, really? Everybody's into it. And I said, no, we're not doing that. There was something about Harry Potter just really bothered me. But what do you say to parents that are struggling with that?
I think you have to have a talk between the two parents and decide where your line's going to be. And I think that's true with a lot of cultural stuff. Like, are you going to say don't listen to the radio or stream music because there's, you know, some really lascivious lyrics out there? Do you cut it off there? Do you limit what books somebody's going to read? I think at the end of the day, it's good to let that be a conversation, and a conversation about culture, and understand why maybe you're reticent for somebody to dive into that and talk about it. Because, of course, we know that if you tell somebody you can't do something, especially if you tell a younger person you can't do something, what's the first thing they do? They go do it. So, but if you have a conversation and maybe explain why it could be problematic, that might be more helpful. But, yeah, if it's, again, I think it's a case by case. It's family by family. Decide what hill you're willing to die on, right? Decide what issues you're willing to say, I'm going to pay the price of this, you know, we're going to have this conversation, I'm going to put my foot down on this. And if it's important to you, you put your foot down. If you say it isn't worth, you know, having a big issue over, but this other thing is, maybe we let that go, but we keep an eye on it.
Adam's so balanced, isn't he? Tell this wonderful live studio audience here in Dubuque, Iowa, for the Christ the King Conference, for Our Lady of Good Success Radio Network, Aquinas Communications. Tell them your background. You have a very extensive background in mental health, right?
Yeah, so a little bit. So I have a master's in adult clinical psychology. I'm all but dissertation for the doctorate, which means everything. Did comps, did the clinical hours and all of that. Number of years of experience in forensic psychology, doing psychological evaluations for the parole board system and working with prisoners of all types. So every type of crime and human evil for quite a few years in the prison system. Also worked in the community for years in the training clinic. So a little bit of a background with mental health.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Adam. Mm-hmm. Okay, next question, please.
Yeah, hi, Debbie and Adam. Thank you, first of all, for coming to Dubuque. We're honored to have you here for a live broadcast. My name is Kevin Tigges. I pray to my guardian angel regularly for protection because I think we're always under spiritual attack. But I'm really interested to hear more around how do I deepen that relationship or what role does the guardian angel play in our life? Maybe just talk to us a little bit more around guardian angels.
Well, Adam's got a book coming out on the history of angels, coming out with the Sophia Institute Press. It'll be out in September. He did such an amazing deep dive into this area, so you may want to mark that on your calendars for September. But I've spoken about, and I've also been in the classroom teaching on angels for over 20 years, especially guardian angels. And so I'll go first on this one. The easiest way to deepen your relationship with your guardian angel is just to be aware and very grateful that you have a guardian angel. Your guardian angel was given a mission by God himself. Your guardian angel beholds the face of God and is ministering to you at the same time. Your guardian angel's role, they took on that mission. Your guardian angel's role is to get you to heaven. So when we honor that, when we recognize that God has had this plan for us to help us. And you know, a lot of people will say that the first question I always used to get when I would teach on angels, they would say, well, why did we need a guardian angel, right? Because God knew what we were going to be up against. He knew we needed that spiritual bodyguard, that soul guard, right? And it's incredible. And if you look at Psalm 91 in most translations, right in the middle of the psalm, it talks right about how your guardian angel is there to guard you and guide you, to illuminate your mind and to strengthen your will. And so the key, though, is to recognize you have your guardian angel every single morning, and in the evening, thank your guardian angel. So just like a little quick experiment here, real quickly, be really honest, and I'll share with the EWTN Global Catholic Radio audience, real quickly, show of hands, how many of you woke up this morning and thought about your guardian angel? Okay, that's how many would you say roughly, about a third? Third? Yeah. A third, that's really good. Give yourselves a round of applause. That's really good. That is really good. Typically when I go and speak on angels, I'll ask them to do that, and one or two hands will go up in a crowd of 200 to 500 people. It's unbelievable. And so that's the key, and that's a way to deepen your relationship and to allow your guardian angel to work more in your life. Second way, get in a state of grace, stay in a state of grace, because you gain clarity when you're in a state of grace, and your guardian angel can work, I would say, more effectively in your life spiritually when you are focused. Now, a lot of people will say, and I've even heard some celebrity people out there say, well, if you're in mortal sin, the guardian angel's not gonna help you. That's not true. We don't know that. And these are all statements that I think are sometimes made to kind of, I don't know, frighten people, if you will, that you're going to be so cut off, like completely cut off, if you're in any state of sin. That's just not true. Your guardian angel was assigned to you. You have one guardian angel. It's uniquely created for you. A lot of private revelation has said, a lot of saints have said that it's matched to your personality. Why? Because the goal is you're going to get to heaven, right? And when you get to heaven, that guardian angel stays with you but transitions into your heavenly friend. So you're going to have like a best friend that you like. You really like this spirit, right? You really like this person to be with in heaven. And so it's really cool how God set it up. And so that would be my best and most direct advice. I would not try to communicate in a way where you're trying to get the guardian angel to reveal stuff to you or manifest or do any of that. That's where it becomes dangerous, and I'll give that part over to Adam.
Yeah, and the other thing is simply ask them to help you. So when you're struggling with temptation and you're about to fall yet again to temptation, as we do as humans all the time, ask for help. Say, I'm struggling. Please help me even more. Because don't forget, they're always fighting for you. Don't think that like they're off having coffee somewhere and, you know, having a chat with another angel and they're not forgot about
mine's
you.
Mine's exhausted. Mine's working overtime. You realize that, right?
So, you know, they're always encouraging you. So ask for help when you're struggling, and then ask for help when you're doing holy things. When you're in Mass, my mind's drifting. Oh, where was I in the rosary? Ask for help to do the pious holy things too, because they're there to encourage you and help you move along. And you've gotten innumerable times your guardian angels already helped you and you don't even know it. And you've been inspired and you've been encouraged and you have been strengthened in the face of temptation. So, you know, ask them, and that engagement is good, and thank them, because they've done a lot even if you don't know it.
There's a whole network working behind the scenes. Just all you have to do is look at an LA freeway. If you've ever looked at an LA freeway, isn't it amazing? You don't see, right? It's unbelievable. You have to imagine that they are helping people not get into accident and stuff like that, or various different things that could happen, which could prematurely take you from this world. So it's very, they're just amazing, absolutely amazing. Next question, please.
Okay. Since we're on guardian angels, I have actually quite a few questions about guardian angels. So I'm just going to kind of read them all off, and we'll go from there, I guess. Andy from Dubuque wants to know, can you see your guardian angel? And Jerry from Dubuque, she wants to know, do any of us have more than one guardian angel? Does our guardian angel interact with St. Michael? When your guardian angel works for you, when you're not very smart, does your angel get stronger?
That's why I said mine's working overtime. And go, wow, you know what? Maybe the listeners want to hear more of this. So you made a reference to the order of the Mass, and then you talked about the penitential prayers, penitential rites of the Mass, right?
Yes.
And we've talked about this before, that the Mass washes away the venial sins, right?
Yes.
With all the different prayers that we say. But if you have a mortal sin on your soul, you should not receive, because you're heaping another mortal sin on your soul. So talk a little bit about that, because you just said it. You said we come with all our brokenness, all our wounds. We bring it to Mass. And then some people may feel like, well, I'm bringing myself, my genuine self, to Mass, and that includes all my sins. So I feel like I'm welcome at the table. What do you say to all that?
I would say that I would encourage you to always have that deeper conversion that isn't necessarily primarily juridical, because it is true that you do need to, you should go to confession if you have a mortal sin on your soul, but you shouldn't stop going to Mass. And as soon as you start focusing the primary action of God based on whether or not you are in a state of grace, that's when people say, well, I shouldn't go to Mass. And I might as well, as the arch heretic Martin Luther said, when you sin, sin boldly. Like, and the whole point of confession, the whole point of Mass, is your permanent transformation. And this is the long game. And the long game means that if you do have sin on your soul and you are aware of mortal sin, you should go to confession as soon as possible and get rid of that. But that shouldn't be the thing that keeps you from immediately, from the very every second of your life, reaching out to God. For this reason, because and St. Thomas Aquinas talked about this in his Summa, about how even when you are in mortal sin, there you can have a certain kind of growth in human virtue. And that is to say, on one hand, have humility and say, I can't receive communion. Because there are a lot of people, honestly, when they are in mortal sin, there's also this sin of pride that I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. And I mean hell as a descriptive adjective because that's where it leads you. So, you know, like the fact is that you need to grow in humility. You need to get to confession. But I'm so touched by the people here, the Mechif people here at the Native American Indian Reservation here in Belcourt, North Dakota, because there's a great many people who know they shouldn't receive communion, and they still come up for a blessing. They still participate
like
in the holy sacrifice
in the windows of many houses
but,
all at
it's
once.
Funny that you
there's
mentioned
only one sun,
because that's
but
the
it's
very,
manifesting
very
in many places simultaneously.
Interested in,
so
we
got to step
break.
Out of anthropomorphizing angels and saying they're just like us and they're limited like us. They're doing many things simultaneously. They're all before God in heaven, and they're all active here. So in the sense, they're all connected. So in that sense, yeah, they're talking to Michael. Ultimately, they're all obeying God and doing God's will. It's not so much it goes to Michael and then he sends stuff. Though there are theologians that say there's kind of a structure like that. We don't know for sure, right? That's not revealed clearly in Scripture. So do they talk? Yes, in the sense they're all connected and they're all doing God's will.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. That and the third part, the third question, Liz?
Do we have more than one guardian angel?
Okay. So, again, a lot of this comes from private revelation. So you have to take that into account when you're learning about angels. The angels, the truth of the angels is it's a truth of our faith, okay? So that's given. It's in the catechism. It's there. We believe it. The Nicene Creed, all things visible and invisible, we believe it, okay? But some of the details and the nuances of the theology of angels, we really don't know. And we base some of it and most of it on private revelation or the doctors of the church like St. Augustine, St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Basil, St. Jerome, I can go on and on, Bonaventure, right, Padre Pio, I mean, it goes on and on. Okay, it has been said in some of these accounts, in private revelation and understanding of the theology of angels, that those that have been given a task or a mission that is to shepherd souls, you have a wider task, you could be get an additional help, angelic help. So it's been said possibly and that bishops have two angels, you know, different priests and big dioceses, even people in media, because they're reaching lots of souls. You have to have the responsibility of a lot of souls. See, if we preach or teach heresy, if we preach or teach something that's incorrect, and you guys believe it and you start living it, you're not necessarily going to be culpable for that. We are, because we are imparting the faith in a way that could mislead you. So we're the ones who are going to get punished, just like if the priests and the bishops, they're the ones because the responsibility is on them. So it would make sense that they would receive more angelic support.
Yeah, it's basically a pious belief. It's not a teaching of the church. It's kind of it makes sense, and we leave it to, we don't know for sure, and that's okay. There can be mystery. God doesn't reveal everything to us, and we don't need to know everything. Like, you know, the question is Michael an archangel, second rank, or is he a seraphim, or is he above all the angels? You can find a saint or a theologian that'll argue all those points, and the church doesn't give a definitive teaching and say, it's this, right? So there's a bunch of things like that that we just leave up to God and be at peace with it. We don't need to know everything.
Okay, we've got a question from a younger audience member.
My name is Randon. I'm from Piasta. And my question is, what would you tell someone, perhaps someone who's listening right now, who's skeptical of the existence of demons?
Yeah, so here, what I would do is, through the signs of possession, the church figured out, even before 1614, when the rite was put together, the signs of possession that the church figured out to separate it from psychology and medical problems is knowledge of all languages, right? So having schizophrenia doesn't make you suddenly fluent in Greek and Latin and other dead languages. And I can give you many examples that we've seen of that. So mental illness doesn't make you fluent in all languages. Knowing people's secret sins, right? So the demon recounting the most shameful thing you ever did, that maybe even nobody was there but you, and recounting it not vaguely but in detail to the room, they do that kind of stuff. All right, so knowing people's secret sins, mental illness doesn't do that. Third one, detecting the holy when it's not obvious. So if you hold a rosary up, it's obvious you're supposed to recoil if you're faking, or if you hold a crucifix up, you're supposed to recoil. But if we blessed one of these bottles before the event, and there's 10 bottles up here that are identical, the possessed person can say, that one I don't want to touch. Even in the human state, every time, they can identify it. If you taped a relic under the chairs, all the chairs except one chair that doesn't have it, and say, sit anywhere, they'll go to the chair that doesn't have it. They might not be able to say why, but they will. So detecting the holy, all right? Knowing all languages, knowing your secret sins, and then strength beyond their condition in life. That's the weakest of the signs, because in psychiatry we do see tremendous strength that can be a burst of strength, right, with adrenaline. The difference is they never get tired. They could throw the five men around the room for 3 or 4 hours. The adrenaline would have worn off if it was the body. And when they come back to the human state later, they're not sore. They're like, why is everybody panting and covered in sweat? What happened? Okay, so I would point to the four signs.
Okay, so that was a really great answer. But you know, this is a whole different topic now. We've had Eucharistic miracles for centuries. You know, St. Carlo Acutis put together that beautiful exhibit, and people still don't believe in the Eucharist. So you could give them all that those facts and all those things, and they're still not going to believe. We know that from stats that was just released recently about how many people do believe in hell. It was very interesting. So why is that?
Well, the mind resists these things until we have a personal experience. So really briefly, to give you an example of when this happened, we have ladies that sit in and pray with us as witnesses at all the exorcisms. The priest is never alone with the possessed person. And we had somebody new who had just been joining us recently, and she was praying her rosary and sitting there and watching along with the other women. And during the sessions, at one point, the demon kind of turned in the chair and said, oh, so-and-so, you know, how's this going? And mentioned something and addressed them by name. At the end of the day, we were wrapping up, and she was getting ready to head out, and she came up to me and she said, oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that you told the people that come in the names of us, the ladies that are praying. And like, of course we don't tell them your names. They're not introduced at all. They're just there in the church. And I saw the shift in her face when she realized, oh, there is actually something real here, that it knew her name. And we've seen this kind of thing happen many times. So what I'm saying is we often, until we actually encounter it, the mind resists. And it's like, well, is it really real? And then eventually you have an experience where you're like, oh my gosh, it's actually really real. And then the beautiful thing that leads to, God is actually really real, and all the rest of the good stuff. But basically the rational mind resists these things until we have a direct experience.
Great answer. How old are you, may we ask?
I am 17.
17? You speak so well, you should be on radio.
Thank you very much.
We need to give him a round of applause. Great job. Great job. Again, you hear we're at a live studio audience here at the Christ the King Conference for Our Lady of Good Success Radio Network, Aquinas Communications, and we're having a blast at the Q Casino and Resort. And I just want to, real quickly, a shout out to Brandon, who's the food and beverage supervisor here. He has been so gracious and wonderful and kind, and he's a fellow Catholic, and he's on fire for the faith. So just great staff and management here at the Q Casino. So I told him I'd give him a shout-out all over the world. He said, "Will you really?" I said, "Yep, I'm going to do it." So, Brandon, if you're listening online, that was for you. Again, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, X, and Twitch are all got the chats going. They're all sending in questions. And so I just had to let everybody know that we'll put them in the mailbag, okay? So if you have any questions that we're not going to get to, we'll put them in the Spirit World mailbag. And you can always continue to email us questions at TSW, that stands for the Spirit World, at grnonline.com. But I think we answered some of the social media questions, because they were asking how to get closer. Instagram was asking how do you get closer to your guardian angel. We talked about that. Oh, pray the guardian angel prayer. I know we learned it as kids. You know, angel of God, my guardian dear, to whom God's love commits me here. Okay. I know it's a cute prayer. It's a powerful prayer. It's a powerful prayer. So say the guardian angel prayer in the morning and possibly in the evening, or thank your guardian angel, just to make sure that you gives all glory to God. Okay, next question, because we can probably take about three or four more questions before we end this great episode, and then I think we're going to get lunch soon. We're super excited because I don't think Adam and I even had breakfast, so this is awesome. Next question, please.
Hi, my name is Jill. I'm from Milan. What do you recommend to combat spiritual warfare at the workplace, especially when colleagues or coworkers use profanity and take the holy name of Jesus in vain?
Okay, I would love to answer this, because we used to do this show a lot on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. We actually brought this up several times, and we had callers phone in what they do in the workplace when they're in a very secular kind of atmosphere. And I would definitely recommend having a blessed St. Benedict medal, a blessed miraculous medal, a crucifix, hopefully you're allowed to wear it. Mm-hmm. I would definitely have sacramentals. I would also bring holy water to your cubicle or your office and have holy water. Sacramentals are very powerful in that area. I have met people, especially through the life coaching ministry that I do. By the way, that's at standtalltoday.com. It's just a little plug there, standtalltoday.com. But we've met clients who have said that they brought in holy water and they would sprinkle it around their desk, and within a couple months, the atmosphere changed in the office. And they didn't tell anybody. They believed. They brought sacramentals in. The other thing I would do too is, there used to be this kind of practice where when somebody took the Lord's name in vain, a Catholic would quickly make the sign of the cross, you know, and I think that could work, but I also think it could be off-putting in a way, because you're singling that person out in a way. What I would do instead, now that I've thought about this for many years after doing shows on this, is just maybe bow your head and say a quick little prayer. Or you can even in conversation, if they're open to it, say, you know, when you say the name of our Lord, that is a prayer. So just remember, it's a prayer, not, you know. And so, but I've seen people still do the sign of the cross thing. I don't know if that's going to make for happy, you know, workplace relationships. But, you know, but that would be what I would suggest based on the episodes we have done on that. What would you say?
One thing I've noticed over the years, and it was a beautiful thing that came out of working in the exorcism world, there's people that come in that are Satanists, are in real witchcraft. Not I bought a book at the mall, witchcraft, but real witchcraft, like the serious stuff, that have done horrible offenses to God. And they might be wearing things that are really offensive to God. And they're also asking for help. I found it's really beautiful to see past the bad stuff that they're wrapped up in and the fear and the anger in them, and see a soul that is being deceived and warped and harmed, and turn that into a loving prayer for them. You know, imagine
they're wounded too.
They're wounded, and we've been wounded at some points in our lives. We've been callous and exploitive and thoughtless at moments in our lives. Maybe not to that extent towards God, but we've all been through troubled moments. And so to see past that and not get really upset and say, oh, I can't believe you did that. I'm so angry with you. Like, God doesn't need us to defend him. Yes, it's an offense. Yes, they're going to pay for that between them and God. But let's forgive them for our part. Forgive them and pray for them to receive grace and conversion. And it doesn't have to be an outward sign. It doesn't have to be intruding on them and make them feel like, oh, you're pushing your religion on me. But just pray internally. Pray for them and forgive them. And see it as something very sad, not something that we need to fight, but it's actually very sad. That would be my take.
Yeah, I love that. That's very good. We have time for more questions. We have about 3 minutes.
Okay. Mary from Dubuque wants to know, she gets a lot of requests for money in her mail every day. She would like to be able to help in her donations. Some of them are Catholic, some of them are not. She would like to know, is this a virtue? Is it going overboard?
What, to give to everybody who asks?
Yeah.
Okay, this is just me talking now, Debbie Giorgiani. I'm not representing EWTN, not representing Guadalupe Radio Network, just me. If it were me, I would give to your parish and other Catholic, solidly Catholic, authentically Catholic organizations, but give to Catholic radio. Please. And there's spring pledge drives happening all around the country. I have been doing pledge drives for 15 years. I'm telling you this from the bottom of my heart. It is not because I'm in this work. It's because I've seen the fruits of this work. Catholic radio is saving souls. It's getting people closer to God every time people tune in. If you sat in my office for one day, you would believe it, and you'd give every ounce of extra money you have to Catholic radio because it's working in the evangelization movement. It's reaching people in the hearts and minds and souls deep inside of them. It's reaching people behind prison walls and hospital rooms and nursing homes in the privacy of their cars and their homes. It's a lifeline. It's a companion. It is walking with them all the way on this road to holiness, this road to sainthood. Please give to Catholic radio. And give to your local Catholic radio station. So that's where you guys are right here at Aquinas Communications. But all around who's listening to us at EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network, pledge drives are happening all around the country. And I've said this many times. Give to your local Catholic radio station, and then please remember EWTN. It's a beautiful family.
Yeah, this is just me talking. Again, not representing anybody, just my thoughts on it. Paul does address this, and he says you should give to the church, you should give charitable things, but not to the point that you become a burden on other people. So you shouldn't give to the point where you're now impaired and then you need to go to other people yourself. So give within reason, be reasonable. Personally, I would say research things, find something you really feel strongly about and focus on that. Don't feel like you have to give to everything that arrives in your mailbox, because then you're going to be on more and more lists, and pretty soon you're going to be getting 60 things a month. Be reasonable, be balanced.
I think we're down to the final 60 seconds. I don't know if we can squeeze another one in unless it's quick. No? Okay, how about we'll group all of those for the mailbag, a future mailbag. So you'll hear Liz is going to mark it that it's coming in from Dubuque, Iowa. I'll announce it on a future The Spirit World show. Also, to everyone listening on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, thank you so much for listening and sitting this one out. And I think the fine folks here in Iowa did a great job at asking the questions on your behalf at this wonderful conference, Christ the King Conference at the Q Casino and Resort. And it's being hosted by Our Lady of Good Success Radio Network, Aquinas Communications. We are so grateful. We are to be here live on location. It is amazing. You got 10 seconds, Adam.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for all the listeners. There's wonderful people here in the room. God bless you all, and God bless our listeners.
Beautiful. So with that, we are going to get ready to close this episode, and I'll just wait for that closing music. There's our closing music right on cue. Thank you to our senior producer, Tim. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Frank. This is amazing. So good. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much. Wow. I think we're going to blow the speakers out, but there's the music for Adam Bly. I'm Debbie Giorgiani. Until next Saturday, have a beautiful and blessed week. We'll see you real soon.